Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always on the titular podcast with Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing all right. The snow found us again. I was all excited about our mild winter and not having snow, and now there's like tons of snow on the ground and I'm not happy about it. But other than that, things are pretty good over here. The wrestling was fun last night, even if I had to stay up until like 6 to watch it.
The wrestling was fun last night. And obviously we've got the Jim Ross tour coming tomorrow. The day before a tour is always... There's like a few things that happen the day before a tour. This time it actually falls under my boyfriend moving in with me at the same time, which is a bit of a mindfuck. But the usual...
There's a lot going on.
There's the usual day before routine, which is I usually order a takeaway the night before I go on tour to kind of settle myself, a little enjoyment thing. I pour myself a beverage, check, and then I can't sleep. So I end up getting about 4 hours sleep before I need to go to the airport or in the car, wherever I'm going. And then also there's the dreaded, have they got on the flight? So as of right now, Jim Ross is on his first flight and... hopefully will land soon and where he's going to land and then get on his second flight. And once he's on his second flight, then that's when we get to relax.
I know that's always like the, well, at least he's in the air. At least he left Oklahoma or wherever he was. He was, I don't know if he was like back in Oklahoma or I don't know where he flies from. He's a busy man. He goes places. But
I'm not going to give away his details to you, Sondra.
No, of course
so
not.
You'll be
of course
chasing
not.
Him about with a cowboy hat on.
Obviously, I'm definitely the type to do that. But no, it's good that he's on his flight, and I hope everything goes smoothly, and that he just arrives and things are lovely. I mean, you've worked with Jim before, so it's not, at least you don't also have the anticipation with this one of like, how are they going to be? Are they going to be like difficult? Are they going to not be difficult? Are they going to have any like weird requests, like helicopters? You just never know.
Sorry, I've got a very chesty cough. So it's, if I laugh, it kind of brings it out.
I understand.
Jim has one strange request. So, like, well, he doesn't really have any strange requests. But you know he loves a Moscow Mule.
Yes.
And he likes lime juice for that. But it has to be freshly squeezed lime juice. And we don't tend to do that over here. I think it's more a thing in America.
Okay.
So, like, you can't just, like... go to the store here and buy a bottle of fresh lime juice. Or maybe you can in like artsy-fartsy organic fucking vegan shops. But not like in a supermarket like, you know, Tesco Extra or something.
Uh-huh.
So when we did the tour in 2018, one of our crew, Molly Spartan, she was kind of... she's very like, tell me what needs done and I'll do it. So it's like, you know, kill this person, bury the body, be back in 20 minutes. Right, fine. So she goes and does what
she'll
she
make it
do.
Happen.
She'll make it happen. So, but anyway, so she kind of wanted the task of every day kind of doing this lime thing. And we were in like Galway in Ireland. She had to go and find this like fucking fruit and veg shop so she could find limes so she could squeeze them so he had lime juice. And the thing is, he never asked her to do it and he would have 100% taken other stuff. But he in no way like said... oh no, don't do it, it's fine. She went to the effort to get the limes, so he was going to let her squeeze them and make him his Moscow Mules in a traditional fashion.
Which, you know, I mean, it is better with fresh lime juice, to be fair, but, you know, and it's great that she went to the effort to do it.
So
she really does make things happen on tours, it's amazing.
She does. So she's, you know, I mean, I hope she's aware that she's probably going to have to do the same thing on this tour. Like, it's probably going to happen.
Can you get like a juicing mechanism so that it's at least a little bit easier?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't mind.
Because they make those things that like aren't that difficult that you just like stick it in and it squeezes for you so you get more of the juice out.
Maybe that's an Argos trip tomorrow during the day. Imagine writing that one off as a business expense. A fresh lime squeezer? We have interesting days. I mean, I had to sign hot water bottles off once, so it's not nothing's new now.
Exactly.
So, yeah, but there's lots going on. Now, the WWE's earnings report has come out, like, 10 minutes ago from when we were recording this. So, like, I've read bits and pieces, but I don't really want to, like, bring anything up until I actually understand what's going on. So I'll try and bring that up as, like, the last thing here on the main podcast. I was gonna ask you a question, not about the actual situation, but obviously, Jim Cornette and Dave Meltzer have now fallen out completely because of the idea that, you know, Cornette doesn't believe in the wrestling that Dave likes and all that kind of stuff, and Dave doesn't buy into Jim's theories.
Okay.
So I was gonna ask you, I mean, go and look at that storm. It is worth car crash watching.
I haven't seen this Twitter drama, and now I'm upset that I missed it. Well, I don't follow either Dave Meltzer or Jim Cornette, so that's probably how I missed it.
That's probably going to do it. But I was going to ask you, have you ever encountered falling out with someone over wrestling? And was there a scenario? I thought that could be a fun question.
I'm trying to think. I don't think I have. I mean, I've fallen out with people that, you know, things were wrestling adjacent. I don't think I've ever fallen out with anyone over wrestling. I kind of feel like because, like, my wrestling opinions are pretty known and I don't hide them. I'm not like a closeted weirdo. I'm like, hi, I like weird shit. If you don't, then that's on you. I think the closest I've come to falling out with someone or like having a situation is with someone that I no longer speak to, for a variety of reasons. But I was at his house watching, I think Royal Rumble, or like I would go down to see him in Indiana, like to, I don't know, hang out and stuff because we were pals. And he hated Kevin Owens. He hated Kevin Owens. He couldn't stand Kevin Owens. He thought Kevin Owens was the scum of the earth because of like stories that someone told him in a locker room that were like stories three times removed from the original story, right? It was one of those things like Kevin Owens was a dick to this person who was a friend of a friend of mine. I was like, okay. And he hated Kevin Owens. And he's actually someone who came with Mr. Sandra and me to NXT Milwaukee. And I don't think anyone listening to this knows who that is. And if you do, just like, don't say anything. But he came with us to NXT Milwaukee. This was years ago. And at NXT Milwaukee, Kevin Owens actually appeared as a surprise. Like, he wasn't announced for that show. He came to confront Sami Zayn. I think Sami Zayn was still injured at the time. And it was a big moment because Kevin Owens, like, one of his favorite venues is Turner Hall in Milwaukee. Kevin Owens came out and, like, immediately I looked at him and he just looked pissed because, of course, like, he will ruin your good time. He's like former me when I used to be meaner about the Undertaker situation and you couldn't stand by me because, like, I was mean about it. He was that, but with Kevin Owens, and meaner. So I turned around. I gave him money. I said, go get me a beer right now. Go get me a beer. Like, I don't need your energy. I don't need your presence here. Just, like, you go. And he did. And unfortunately, like, the line was too short. And he came back soon. And I was like, I'm not talking to you right now. I'm going to enjoy this segment. And then I'm going to just, like, we can go back to your moodiness in a minute. But I think that's the closest I've ever come to, like, having a problem with someone over wrestling. I don't know. What about you?
I don't know if this has ever been, like, I will say this. I feel like what's happened to me in the past is that, like, I can totally, so like me and you disagree on a lot of wrestling stuff, but we agree on a lot of stuff as well. So we're kind of like, as much as we agree on, we disagree on. But like, very rarely, I mean, there'll be sometimes where I'll say, I'll maybe call it saying like, well, you know that that is probably objectively good. You're just hating the people involved. And you'd be like, yeah, that's absolutely what that situation could be. So it's not like, it's like I understand the context of it, but like, I think sometimes I've been around people who...
Well, and you're not going to try to force me to like it, and I'm not going to try to force you to like certain things. It's just like,
yeah.
I'm presenting something that I enjoy.
But it's like...
If you like it, you do. If you don't, you don't. Like, I can't change your opinion. I'm not responsible for you.
Yeah, but like, I mean, so like, I know that like, you know, in the sort of like, is like the Okada Omega matches are great wrestling matches to certain people. They bore me to tears, right? But I recognize still that they are good in the conventional sense. Like, I'm able to make that distinction of what that is. I think when there's people...
You just don't want to watch them. They're your Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, exactly. But where people lose me is when, like, they say something equivalent to, like, Omega and Okada is bad, but say it's the worst. Because then I'm like, well, then you're not being, like, real. So if somebody's wrestling opinions are so stupid that they, like, can't... Like, you can dislike somebody or whatever, and I'm fine with it. I don't care. But if you're, like, the sort of person who, like, can't really back anything up as to why you don't like something, or you, like, shit on something with no reasoning, that, to me, is... I find that harder to be around, because my job is to be around several different people talking wrestling, and then there's a weird... I mean, this sounds really wanky, but it almost, like, elevates your kind of level of being able to discuss wrestling a little bit. Like, I can't discuss it the same way I did 10 years ago. That just... the job means I can't do that. So when I'm not in the job and I'm kind of... I like to just have fun and just kind of banter about wrestling. So I've not... I can't think of anything I've specifically followed up with about a wrestling opinion. Oh, no. I tell you, I did... So Ollie got too drunk. We didn't fall out, but Ollie... both are involving Ollie, funnily enough. So, you know, common denominator.
I mean, I've witnessed certain interactions. So
but,
yes.
Like, he... Ollie's the sort of person where, like, he has to call the shot of what he's doing. He can't be like... I'm like, I would stay and watch 205 Live with you, right? Even though I have zero interest in doing so. But I'll do it. I'll be like, okay, fine. Ollie would not do that. Ollie would not, that's just not, he cannot bear to be not enjoying himself for more than 5 minutes, or he, like, throws a strop. So at WrestleMania 30, when Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker, he wanted to go and get a drink, like, like 30 seconds later. And I was like, this is like this like massive moment. We're in the building. I wanted to feel the energy of it. And he was very adamant about leaving. And we ended up getting in a fight. So I was like, go fuck off then. Like, just, I'm not going. You go if you want to go. So we had one of those like pissy little arguments. And then the other time that we fell out, wrestling related, but it's more maybe adjacent, is one year when he came around for the Royal Rumble at my house. And he got drunker and drunker and drunker. And then... so like... when you're in Glasgow and you're in a flat and you're watching wrestling, if you're on the... so I was on the first floor at that point. So there's like a ground floor flat, first floor, second floor, third floor. When you're at the first floor, you've got to contend with like both sets of neighbours above and below you to make sure they're both okay. And Ollie thought it was a good idea to stamp on beer cans in the kitchen to try and crush them on the ground.
That doesn't sound like a great idea.
That was not a good idea. And then he is the one... now he still tries to defend this, and I think he has no defense. But here you go. So he was a drunk person, and we were watching the Rumble match. Now, what year would it have been? I think it was after Vancouver. I think it was the year that Roman won the Rumble.
The 2015 Rumble?
Yes, or the year the Triple H won. One of the two. I can't remember the year, but it's one of those two. I think it was the 2015 one. And he... no! What was the year where AJ Styles fought John Cena at the Rumble?
2017, yeah.
He goes out during that match to have a cigarette, and he decides to pull it up on his phone and watch the network version. And I, at the time... did have the network, but I was watching it like on... basically, our network feeds were 30 seconds apart. And Ollie decided, when we were like into the Cena and AJ match, to walk in, and I think what he thought was quiet, but was not in any way quiet, and have it full blading that Cena had just won, and we're like 20 seconds from the end of the match, so we don't know what's happened yet. And he could not understand why everyone was so angry at him, so he like went in a huff about... chill out, like, it's not my fault. And then that made us all angrier. So that was maybe, because I'm like, even though I read spoilers, if I'm not going to be spoiled and I've stayed away from stuff, I expect the people at the party to be able to keep that up.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want a match ending ruined for you like that. Like, that's why I can't refresh Twitter a lot of the time if I'm watching live, because if, like, a lot of times my network will be like, I don't know, a few seconds behind or something, and I've had stuff ruined for me that way, and it's a bummer. It is a bummer.
So yeah, that was one of the chat points. So I know you wanted to talk about...
and you and Ollie are like not great at apologizing to each other either, so I can see how a situation like that would escalate.
I'm better at apologizing than he is. Like, I'm more likely to go, I'm sorry, if whatever. But Ollie has this thing where he'll like raise me, because Ollie loves to be passive aggressive when he's annoyed. And that's my trigger point. Like, I can't handle passive aggressive. You know this. It drives me insane. I'd rather you slap me in the face. It would feel less like I want to, you know, throw a grenade somewhere. So, yeah, we end up just triggering each other. But, you know, that's part of what makes and then he got me this amazing watch for Christmas where on the inside of it there's a quote from Still Game saying, "He who hangeth a boot getteth hee haw." So you know,
which is amazing, and that's such a lovely gift.
Even if he's the worst snorer I've ever met in my life. So before we talk about SmackDown, NXT and AEW, I know that you checked out some highlights from Raw because stuff has been going on. Talk me through any of your thoughts. What were you thinking about anything? Did anything catch your eye?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot that caught my eye. One of my favorite parts of the evening was Angel Garza coming out with Zelina Vega looking amazing. And I mean, both of them looked amazing. They are a great pair. And if Zelina Vega has an Angel Garza Andrade Cien Almas like stable going on, I am here for it. Angel Garza just has charisma for days. And I think he's amazing. And I want him to just win the world, basically. I think he's incredible. He was obviously he came out to confront Humberto Carrillo. He's like, "You're my cousin, but I'm like, I'm the best one in this family, let's be honest." And like, he's not wrong. Like, he does have more charisma than Humberto Carrillo. And I like Humberto Carrillo. I'm not anti Humberto Carrillo. I apologize for coughing. It's still a thing. I'm never going to be well again, I feel. But I thought it was such a great segment because it made me more interested in what Humberto Carrillo was doing as well. Because when he kind of cut the promo back to Angel Garza, obviously Humberto's promo was in Spanish, but, you know, it had a little fire behind it. It was like, "You're not going to, you know, call me out that way. Like, I'm great too." And I can't remember what he said, but it was kind of nice to see a little bit of fire from Humberto Carrillo. It gave him a reason to you know, be in a feud and in a story with his cousin. Like, that's good storytelling stuff right there. And then Angel Garza, you know, DDTing Rey Mysterio on the outside was just crazy. Like, what a way to debut on Raw. I thought that was absolutely brilliantly done.
They're setting a lot of stuff up for WrestleMania season, whether it's like Edge and Orton or Lesnar and McIntyre or Rhea and Charlotte or you know, even like, I mean, Beat Natalia with help from Kyrie. In my head, it was like, are we going to get the Divas of Doom against the Kabuki Warriors at WrestleMania? Because here for it if we do.
Oh, I'm here for it too. I think that would be amazing. I think that would be great. So, I mean, if that's the way they want to go, yeah, bring it on. Like, there was a lot of stuff on Raw that I thought worked well as a show, but it also made me more intrigued for future stuff, which is good because I have to, like, watch some of Raw next week again. But, like, Ruby Riott coming back and then attacking Liv Morgan, was it the most predictable thing in the world? Yes. Was it, like, fairly telegraphed because they were just standing there staring at each other and did they act kind of robotic and not like humans? Like, why wouldn't they just hug or whatever? I don't know. But Ruby Riott versus Liv Morgan sounds intriguing. I'm a lot more into Ruby Riott versus Liv Morgan than Lana versus Liv Morgan in terms of a wrestling match.
Hard
same. So, you know, I mean, like, I still, Riott Squad, I liked them. And I think that sort of like, you know, we were friends and now I have turned on you and I would like to hear Ruby Riott's explanation. It does still kind of baffle me that they want Ruby Riott to be a heel for some reason. Like, she's so likable and adorable and a wonderful person. So it's kind of bizarre to me that they want her to be a bad guy, but whatever. Like, if the feud works and if she pulls it off well, then I'm fine with it. Her hair looked awesome. Like, her green hair looked awesome. So I'm just so happy to see Ruby Riott back, honestly. Like, I think Ruby and Liv could be really, really good. I think Rhea coming out to challenge Charlotte was super fun. I got chills for it, even though I knew it was going to happen. But and then, you know, obviously we'll talk about Charlotte coming to NXT this week. So that's kind of a cool cross-promotion deal. Like, I really liked the NXT segment a lot. So that was just kind of a fun thing on Raw. Like, okay, we're getting things in the air for WrestleMania season. This is kind of awesome. There was a lot of good stuff. I'm trying to think. There's something else I'm missing. The crowd booed Randy Orton mercilessly, and I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, Raw's. I mean, Raw's feeling like a big show. I mean, it's funny. I should probably break this news to you online, Sondra. I actually bought 4 tickets today for Joey Janela's Spring Break.
You're coming.
Yeah. So, and I think that's a real indication of SmackDown as a show.
Did you buy general admission?
Yes.
Okay, good, because that's what I have.
Yeah, the general admission. The thing I think that's weird is that, like, Raw's got all this stuff going on leading up to WrestleMania. It's really exciting. NXT's got everything leading to take over Portland and beyond. But SmackDown's kind of the oddball out. You know, there's not really any feud on SmackDown that people are like, I need to see this show, and to get a ticket for SmackDown, I mean, they might go down in price, but like it's maybe like $90, $75 minimum to get like a first tier seat, which is the only place I really want to sit. And it just doesn't feel like a must-see mm-hmm. show. And I think that if I'm not that bothered about going to SmackDown, that's a real sign that the show has lost like core people who would be willing to give them the benefit of the doubt on WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, because you're usually a lot more hardcore. Like, I'm going to go to all the WWE events that I can. You're kind of the opposite of me, right? Where I'm like, I guess I'll go to some WWE stuff. But, like, I'm so excited about Spring Break, and I'm so excited about Kaiju, and I'm so excited about way too many shows, and I don't know how I'm going to function. I need to start making some choices. But, yeah, like, if they're losing you in terms of interest for SmackDown, that's really not a good sign. Like, it benefits me because I'm really happy that you'll be at Spring Break with me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it'll be good. I'm looking forward to it. But
Orange Cassidy versus Minoru Suzuki. Are you kidding me?
Just the idea of that in your mind. So you know, the one other thing I want to say, I know we'd mentioned the whole Meltzer Cornette thing, and the what? Look, I am not the biggest fan. You know, we've talked about this before. I'm not the biggest fan of like Kenny Omega's style of wrestling, or even the Young Bucks style of wrestling. But I think that, like, Cornette's view on it is just so sort of like, this is how I feel, you have to feel the same way, and that's obviously going to cause lots of problems, which I think are, you know, you push, like, live and let live if you've got friends who disagree. I think where Meltzer probably doesn't help himself in some way.
Yeah, let people enjoy a thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Where I think Meltzer doesn't help himself, and I like Dave, is that I think that once you accept the booking to go on, like, a cruise related to a company, and you sort of agree to be a talent on a cruise, it's essentially an AEW cruise kind of thing, like, you have to expect blowback mm-hmm. from that, because that does feel like, as a journalist, like, it's an argument to be made, that it's like, well, you know, you are shacking up with them, you know, you are taking bookings to do your radio show on their cruise. So I think that for him, while I 90% agree with Dave on the idea that, like, you know, considering Chicago and New York small markets are insane, but I think that in some ways you have to expect, if you're going to take those kind of bookings, that people are probably going to react in a certain way to you, and you can't really be surprised at it.
Well, and I don't think he is surprised at it. Like, he's said before on his show, like, I understand that people are, like, accusing me of just liking this because they're my friends, but that's not it. Like, it's genuinely what he likes, and that's kind of why he's friends with those people, too. So I guess, like, for me personally, I don't have a problem with him accepting bookings like that. Like, he can do what he wants to do. I think people just place way too much weight on Dave Meltzer's opinion. I think people place more weight on Dave Meltzer's opinion than Dave Meltzer places on Dave Meltzer's opinion.
Yeah, which is funny because I read a lot of his stuff and I like a lot of his stuff, and I, you know, if him and I were sitting in a room and it was like, what do you want to watch? We would want to watch completely different things, like, straight away. So, but yeah, he is, I think, I'm curious in like 15 years if there'll be another person in wrestling, like a Dave Meltzer type person who, like, people look to for their view. I'm curious, because I just don't know if there's something like that going to go through. Because people don't really... I mean, Wade Keller, whenever he... I mean, you think that fantasy booking, Wade Keller sometimes, when you listen to him, like, he'll bring up scenarios and you're like, you know they're never going to do this. What are you talking about? And he'll spend 20 minutes talking about how Cesaro might win the Royal Rumble. And you're like, well, he's not going to. Like, it's just not going to happen. So anyway.
I mean, it's fun to imagine things like that, but you can't imagine things like Cesaro winning the Royal Rumble and then get, like, super disappointed when it doesn't happen and then be like, this company is bullshit. I mean, like, obviously WWE is not 100% for me anymore. Like, I like I said, I enjoyed a lot of stuff on Raw. I actually watched most of Raw. Like, I turned it on, I watched the whole thing up to the main event, and then I couldn't be bothered because, I don't know, it was just dudes again. But I really liked, you know, Asuka versus Natalya. I thought was really good. A lot of the wrestling stuff I thought was really good. And it's fun when it kind of hooks me in. I feel like a way more of a casual WWE viewer at this point than, you know, than you who watches it every week. But it's, I can acknowledge when stuff is fun and good, but I'm not going to get all bent out of shape either when, you know, SmackDown is doing stuff that I don't like. I mean, I don't want to see Baron Corbin and Roman Reigns a whole bunch, so I'm just not watching the show, and that's easy for me. And I know it's hard because, you know, for people like Wade Keller and Meltzer and you and you know, and me for a long time, if it's your job to watch it and cover it, you have to watch it and cover it. But like, I don't know. I guess there's just so much other wrestling that I enjoy that I'm not going to get bent out of shape if one company isn't to my liking because I'm just going to watch something else.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess you and I are different because we're more like opinion piece people than like we're not presenting like a newsletter about it and putting like and reporting on stuff, which I think is why they probably get a harder time than we do. So what do you want to talk about first, NXT or AEW? Pick one.
Let's talk about NXT first. I think I'm like really excited about NXT.
So let's talk about NXT. So they had a pretty packed show. Loads going on, so let's just go through the big talking points. I say that, and Sandra will want to talk about all the points I don't bring up, so we'll try and limit it as much as we can.
I want to talk about all of, like, NXT seemed to be just, like, from my brain this week. It was so good.
It was. We'll talk about a lot of it. So, yeah. You want to get through everything with AEW as well. So,
of course.
We kick off the show with Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne coming out. They actually came out in a golf cart with their trophy. They get interrupted by the Undisputed Era, obviously setting up this tag match coming up at TakeOver Portland. Matt Riddle's doing a lot of his kind of stoner gimmick. Pete Dunne's playing the kind of, you know, the one-liner at the end guy. Riddle asks at one point, how many fish can a Bobby Fish fry if Bobby Fish could fry fish? Which I can't really say.
Because Bobby Fish had said, like, you're fishing or something like that. And he's like, Pete, Bobby said fish. That's so funny because it's his name. And then he was like, riddle me this. Ha 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 ha. It was very amusing to himself.
How did the segment work for you? Because we were very hard on the Dusty Tide Classic main event last week. How did this opening segment work for you?
Like, remember when I said last week, I wish that this weren't the finals of the Dusty Classic because I'm really kind of loving the Broserweights and I kind of like their dynamic. Kenny, yeah. I really love the Broserweights. I love them. I think they're funny. And they worked, like, Matt Riddle works together, works so much better for me with Pete Dunne. And Pete Dunne works so much better for me with Matt Riddle. And I don't know what's happened, but it's one of those things in wrestling where it's not something I wanted. Didn't want it. Didn't want it at all. Now I have it. Now I love it. Don't know what to tell you. Wrestling is magic and the best thing ever. I really think that their dynamic works because Pete Dunne was someone in need of more personality and he was someone in need of, you know, more of a character, I guess. And he doesn't even have that much more of a character at this point because Matt Riddle is so charismatic and stuff. Then, you know, like it's bringing Pete Dunne kind of into the fold. And I think Matt Riddle's kind of stoner humor and whatnot is, it's funny and cute, but it was kind of like, okay, over and over again. But there's something about Pete Dunne just giving him a look and then saying that they're going to smoke the Undisputed Era and like making one line on Twitter and in promos like this, that just works for me. I think it's better for both of them to be together at this point, and I kind of like it.
They were definitely a lot better here. Pete Dunne kind of doing the one-liner thing at the end and Matt Riddle being like the kind of enthusiastic one who's clearly stoned was fun, and the golf cart was funny. I still hate the Dusty, I was going to say the Dusty Young Classic, the Dusty Rhodes Tag Classic. But yeah, it was a fun opening segment and it built the match fairly well. And now the Dusty Rhodes thing's out of the way, it'll probably be better. We also got Angel Garza.
And if they can stay a tag team, then I'm here for it, honestly.
Yeah, it'd be pretty good. We got Angel Garza beating Isaiah Swerve Scott. I've got to say, I was pretty disappointed that they didn't like really hammer home Angel Garza's Raw appearance. Like I wanted to see Zelina Vega here. I wanted to see it kind of, I'm not a big fan of people sort of being on two different shows in the same company, but like not, I feel like I was really disappointed that Zelina wasn't there because that was a big part of Raw when they were together. And I felt like they missed a trick with that, even though it was a good match.
I think they did miss a trick not having Zelina there. I agree with you, but I think they did mention the Raw appearance plenty. You know, they showed the video package of Angel Garza on Raw, and even in his promo he's like, you know, I've taken out tons of people. I took out my cousin Humberto Carrillo and Rey Mysterio, like, you know, just a little guy you may have heard of that I just, you know, obliterated on Raw because I'm Angel Garza and I'm awesome. I liked this. I liked the promo and I thought that they wove together the Raw story pretty well. I would have liked to see Zelina there. I think I agree with you on that.
I think for me, it's like, without Zelina there, you're kind of like, why is she not there? There's no explanation of her not being there. It's like, it's one of those details where it's like, all you needed was one line on commentary saying that Zelina wasn't there for a certain reason. I just felt like the promo was like, the promo just left me kind of going, where is she? Why is she not here?
See, it's funny because I didn't even really think about it until you brought it up. And I agree with you. It would have been better if she was there. But I think for me, Angel Garza just works as a person so well and works as a person. I mean, in NXT, he's obviously a lot more known than he is on Raw. So it made sense for him to come out with somebody. But in NXT, he doesn't necessarily like need her around, maybe as their feeling and their theory. Maybe she didn't want to travel. But 11 on commentary would have been good. Or if he had said something like, you know, I told Zelina to stay home today because, you know, I'm so confident in my abilities, blah, blah, blah. I think that would have been better for sure. But I was happy to see Angel Garza. And was this for the number one contendership?
Well, Garza challenged Jordan Devlin after the match. I don't think it was specifically a number one contendership match, but he did challenge him afterwards.
But it seems like we're leading back to Jordan Devlin versus Angel Garza. Which,
he's got his rematch,
know,
right?
Sounds like a good idea to me. Yeah. So I'm happy that he's got his rematch. You know, he didn't get pinned for that title. So it's good that he's going to be able to fight for it again. And I'm kind of curious what they're going to do. Like, I don't know if they're going to want to keep the Cruiserweight title on Jordan Devlin and have it on an NXT UK guy. If they're going to put it back on Angel Garza, I don't know. But I love Angel Garza. And I think that he is incredible. Like, if you want a Hispanic star in your company, there is a dude who's really, really good, and it's Angel Garza, and he should be the one that they're getting behind. And it seems like they are, which is good. And Isaiah Swerve Scott is great at wrestling too, and I liked their match a lot.
Yeah, no, it is good. Just for me personally, I would call out if this happened the other way around, and I think it was lazy to not have her there. So it just, for me, like, I was more about the story, and I felt like I was getting, like, remember, like, when they went to the UK for No Mercy 1999, brought half the crew, and you're like, why?
Uh-huh.
Just weird. Like, I was just like, he's just coming off this hot angle. Just bring...
Yeah, like, where's the union? Where's Zelina Vega?
Like, just bring her. Like, it just... don't know. Didn't like it. So we also, though, got a really great split-screen segment on the show with Johnny Gargano and Finn Balor building to their match at TakeOver Portland. And, I mean, I'm never going to not pop for a line where Johnny Gargano says, if the Finn Balor that lost 17 weeks in a row to Bobby Lashley on Raw comes, I will... end him, or whatever it was he said. What a great line. And Balor was really good. He was really passionate. Like, that might be my like, tied for one of my two favorite matches I'm looking forward to in that show.
Yeah, for sure. I thought this was incredible. I thought it was a great segment. Johnny Gargano and Finn Balor both seem to be on fire for this. They both seem pissed. They seem so angry at each other. I mean, last week on NXT, I don't know if we talked about it, but after Finn Balor beat Trent Seven, he looked right into the camera and said, Johnny Gargano, I'm coming for you. So this is obviously very contentious, right? It's kind of the present and the past of NXT and Finn Balor wanting to prove himself. And Finn Balor has those insecurities from Raw. Like, Johnny Gargano calling out the fact that Finn Balor on Raw wasn't all that like, he wasn't a dominating guy. He wasn't that formidable. He did lose a bunch of times in a row. It kind of set up, you know, we are NXT. We are, you know, this little thing away from Raw and SmackDown. And it kind of, I don't know, it makes the world of NXT, like, NXT is very much like a home crowd thing, right? So the home crowd is going to be behind Johnny Gargano because they're like, yeah, NXT. And Finn Balor's like, yeah, no, Raw Finn Balor, he's dead. He died a long time ago. He's not here anymore. And I'm going to murder your face, Johnny Gargano. And I thought this was excellent. I thought it was really smart having it as a split screen situation too, instead of having them in the same room, because obviously this would have just turned into a brawl. And I think the split screen kind of keeping them apart was very effective for me. I really, really liked this. I thought they were both excellent.
I should make a quick mention of Mercedes Martinez getting a win over Casey Catanzaro. I'm sure that was a big moment for you, getting to see Mercedes, who you're a big fan of.
Yes, I was so happy. Like, I didn't know any was on the show before I started watching, and I was just like, Mercedes Martinez versus Casey Catanzaro, yes please. And also, I mean, was there much like a technical classic that I'm gonna watch for years to come? No, but I thought it was really good. And I think that Mercedes Martinez is the type of person that Casey Catanzaro needs to be working with right now, because Mercedes Martinez is incredible and has been doing this for so long, and she can kind of like lead Casey Catanzaro through a match and teach her things as they're going along. And I think that was evident here. So Mercedes got the win, as well she should, because she is incredible. And Casey Catanzaro, I think, got a really good showing. So it worked to elevate both of them, I think. And I just, hard eyes for days for Mercedes Martinez. I just love her so much, and I'm glad that she's a prominent part of the show.
We also saw Jordan Devlin, the NXT Cruiserweight Champion, taking on Tyler Breeze in a non-title match, which was...
Again, this show came straight from like my hopes and dreams and brain. Like, I love it.
It feels like it did. And for me, because I know that you're a big fan of the 205 like cruiserweight division, for me what worked about this was that like they had him against someone who's not solely in the cruiserweight universe. They had him against somebody who's actually in the rest of the world of like NXT or WWE or whatever. And I thought having Tyler Breeze in there was really good. I thought they worked really well together. And this was like the most I've been into a cruiserweight title match. It wasn't a title match, but a match involving the Cruiserweight champion in ages. So I was a big fan of this.
Yeah, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Tyler Breeze is so awesome. It's just so nice to see him back and doing wrestling and being so good at it. And Jordan Devlin is obviously incredible too. So I, of course, Tyler Breeze was not going to win this match. There wasn't a part of my logical brain that thought that Tyler Breeze was going to win this match, but there was a part of my heart that was like, but what if he won? What if he beat him? What if he got to be the cruiserweight champion later? Like, I know this wasn't a title match, but if he beat Jordan Devlin here, then he'd get to be the champion probably, right? I want to see more of Tyler Breeze getting to do matches like this where he's awesome. I mean, he still kind of feels like he's in that Tyler Breeze role from NXT where he's almost the guy. He gets to the top and he can have these main event killer matches, and then he's never the guy that wins, which sucks. But I don't know. Like, I loved this. And Jordan Devlin versus Tyler Breeze is such an odd matchup. This felt more Worlds Collide than Worlds Collide to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was better, and that it felt like two people who are in different parts of the show just organically having a match. It felt better than, mm-hmm. than what they did on Worlds Collide, which was still a good show. But we then got, for me, the absolute highlight of the show by Country Milk, Bianca Belair coming out. She's going to headline TakeOver Portland. She's calling it Rhea for going to Raw and getting up in Charlotte's business. But Charlotte comes out. She there's like a welcome home chant. She's soaking it all in. She thinks that Bianca's an amazing athlete, but she's not a flair. She's fired up to face the Queen, and then Rhea comes out, and then basically there's this great moment where Rhea and Charlotte are facing off, and Bianca's like trying to get their attention, and like Charlotte like puts her hand in Bianca's face like she's a child and just says this is champions talking right now. And like the reaction that Bianca Belair had to that was the most genuine looking thing on this entire show. I felt like she was legitimately going, are you fucking serious? Like, wrestling in so many ways is like, you know, performance. But I felt like I was just watching the real person get shaded and react. I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. This was awesome. This felt huge. Like, hearing Charlotte Flair's music hit in Full Sail gave me chills. Because it felt like an interesting homecoming. But then, like, she doesn't belong here anymore. And it felt like a presence had descended upon us. And I mean, Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley are both such stars too. This was three superstars in the ring, right? Like, WWE wants to call everyone superstars, but very few people feel like superstars in that company. These three feel like absolute stars. And I thought the interaction with them was great. And I like the fact that Bianca's like, hey, excuse me, I have a match with Rhea Ripley in Portland. Rhea's out there challenging Charlotte for why? Like, I'm going to be the champion after Portland. So it's going to be Charlotte versus me, obviously, because I'm Bianca Belair on the EST of NXT. And I really liked this a lot. Like, Rhea Ripley, I'm finding more and more, I like her speech in short doses. Like, I don't think that she's great at like cutting these long promos, that whole like memories of when I won the title and stuff. I'm just kind of like, okay, fine, Rhea Ripley. And I love her. I think she's awesome. But I think she's just like better at being a badass and stuff than like delivering long promos. And it's kind of like, I don't love Charlotte's delivery of a lot of things either. I love Bianca. Like, I love Bianca on the microphone. And I think she's just so funny because she's just like, you know, Rhea's looking past me. And like when she's talking to Charlotte, and after Charlotte like was like, this is champions talk only, she's like, I'll be a champion soon enough, and you don't even go here. Like, why are you here getting in my business when you don't belong here, Charlotte? Like, this is NXT. And I think, again, it fosters that sort of home crowd reaction, which played into the end of the segment where Charlotte's just being a dick. Like, Charlotte is acting as though her presence has descended on Full Sail. She's deigned to come back to Full Sail. She's deigned to come back to NXT. She's now the queen of everything. She's a 10-time champion. I think it's funny that they're calling her a 10-time champion now, where they were always saying 9 before. But now that she's challenging for the NXT title again, it's 10-time. And I like that, because NXT titles should be considered world championships, because they are, because they're awesome. But yeah, like I like the fact that Bianca was getting in Charlotte's face. And I think it was kind of cool that Rhea was like, yeah, I have a problem with Bianca. We're going to have a match in Portland. But there's a saying you may have forgotten. We are NXT. And then Bianca and Rhea both attack Charlotte. So we never really got Charlotte's answer. Charlotte was too busy being up her own arse to actually answer the challenge and actually challenge for the NXT championship. And seeing Rhea and Bianca sort of ally in terms of like, hey, we're both NXT and you can't come here and disrespect our home. I liked that a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I've always loved in wrestling, it happens a lot in retro ITR, which I love, is I love when there's like say there's a WrestleMania match that you kind of know is happening, and they give you like twists and turns and involve other people to make you think that they might get involved, or they might get the spot of somebody. I always think that's really good. Like, how many different graphics did we have for SummerSlam 99 for the main event? It's Austin China, it's Austin Mankind, it's Austin Triple. Like, but I like that. I like the idea that like you're, to me, that makes it more interesting, because you're playing it like the stuff in the middle actually matters and could change the outcome. And that makes it better than just like, you know, when Batista fought Alberto Del Rio and No Way Out 2014, it's like, I know Batista's going to the main event of WrestleMania. And I'm not sure if they did. Yeah. I'm not sure if the Del Rio thing was with that on the line. But you know what I mean? Things like that, where it's like, there's a February match and it's like, if they win, they get the title shot instead. And like, sometimes it's just done in such a way where you don't in any way think about it. But this was done to create the idea that Bianca's such a player. Do you know what I really would love to see? And it would just be the best thing ever. I think people would boo the shit out of it. I would love to see like a really great match with Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair at TakeOver, and then like have Charlotte ruin it at the end. Like, I think it'd be such like a dick move of her being like, I've made my decision, you know? Like,
yeah, like she wants to face Rhea because Rhea originally challenged her. And the thing is, like, all of this interaction, the three of them interacting together, I want to see Bianca Belair versus Charlotte so badly. Like, the teases of it that we've gotten at Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble has made me want to see Charlotte versus Bianca Belair. And I don't think that we're getting that at WrestleMania. I would be very surprised if Rhea Ripley loses her title in Portland. But, I mean, it'd be kind of awesome if she did, just because I think Charlotte versus Bianca would also be cool. But, I don't think it's going to happen. Like, they seem to want to go with Charlotte versus Rhea Ripley, and they do feel like the two biggest stars. But it kind of saves something for down the line, too. Like, I would love to see Charlotte Flair versus Bianca Belair in future, and you can always come back to this and say, yeah, we have a problem with each other, and it's not resolved.
Yeah, it's really good. It's setting things up for the future. It's making the week-to-week interesting, and, yeah. Like I said it before, it feels like we're in WrestleMania season in all of the good ways, and TakeOver Portland sneaking up as just this like great event is coming up, and then we're still gonna have, you know, chamber stuff which could involve the NXT title in some way. You know, it's a good, and the thing is, we've said this before, the NXT women's division is so far superior to any other WWE women's division that like they should involve it, because it's like, why should we be sitting watching, you know, okay people in a match when we could have this great stuff. So I'm a big fan of the
Yeah, I mean, the division is so stacked, right? Like, so stacked. They just signed Aja Pereira as a referee. Like, it's crazy. And maybe that was her choice. I don't know. I'm, like, really happy for her that she got signed with WWE, and I think it's cool that she's going to be a referee. But it kind of feels like when Drake Wirtz got signed as a referee, and everyone's like, what? Like, Drake Younger is signed to WWE? A, that's weird. And B, like, he's a referee and not a wrestler, and he turned out to be one of like the best refs ever. Don't follow his Twitter for his politics.
Okay. Well, I mean, she's also the first African American female referee in WWE.
Yeah.
So good for her.
And like, I've seen her wrestle live. She's great. But like, if she can also be a great referee, I'm sure. I'm happy for her.
So earlier in the night, we had a big brawl involving the Undisputed Era with Pete Dunne, Matt Riddle, and Tommaso Ciampa, which led to William Regal making a 6-man main event, which is what we got. The Undisputed Era was not Roderick Strong, but the rest of them, against Ciampa, Cole, and Riddle. This is like typical main event NXT fare, good action, hot spots, people are really into it. And in the end, of course, Roderick Strong had to get involved for the DQ because he just couldn't watch his boys go down to Ciampa, Riddle and Dunn. So, I mean, you've got the two big matches at Portland with Ciampa and Cole and the tag match. So it made all the sense in the world to kind of put this together, and people were really into it. And I don't think people really minded that there wasn't a clean finish in it, because it just kind of helped the story with Strong getting involved, I thought.
Yeah, it did help the story. This was fine. Like, this was a lot of fun, really good wrestling, chaos, action, all of the things. It's one of those main event segment angles where I'm like, there really aren't any stakes here. And I'm not, like, super invested in it, just because, like, I like the Broserweights and I love Tommaso Ciampa and Undisputed Era are always great. But it just kind of, it felt a little bit filler, but not filler in a bad way. It's like they're giving you good wrestling to just kind of, like, fill the time. It's like some of the 8-man tags on AEW that are great. But it's like, this is an 8-man tag. It's fine.
You're not going to remember.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You're not going to remember it in 5 years, but that's fine. Like, it doesn't need to be iconic.
And that doesn't mean that it was, like, you know, not enjoyable on the night. So it was fun. I enjoyed it. Roddy Strong's, you know, interference and whatnot. It's just like, oh, you dastard. Of course you're interfering because you're just a horrible human and Undisputed Era can't help themselves. They always interfere and stuff like that, which is why it was so funny when they were calling out Imperium for distracting them and how dare they get in their business. But I think the end of the show is what we really need to talk about.
Yes, it is, because last week we had those three flames, the 2-5-20, which some people were attributing it to Killer Cross, who is now signed with WWE along with Timothy Thatcher. Congratulations to them. We'll talk about that in the overrun. But yeah, so...
Well, and did you notice that they flashed the 2-5-20 during Angel Garza and Isaiah Swerve Scott?
No, I didn't. There you go.
It was just a blip. It was just like a little flash on the screen of, like, it looked
back?
Like a technical glitch, like Solomon Crow had come back. Yeah.
I made that reference.
You did. I'm so proud of you.
But so 2-5-20.
But yeah,
up.
it was cool, and I was like, ooh, it reminded me actually of like Taz on Retro ITR when, you know, the Tron would just turn orange for a minute, and you're like, what is happening? And it is funny because, like, I totally forgot that yesterday was February 5, so I was like, ooh, when is February 5? And I looked at a calendar, and I was like, that's today.
Well, I do want to quickly, before we get to the return, we did have the Undisputed Era put a big yellow X on the back of Ciampa. I'm a big fan of spray paint cans in wrestling shows. Like, I mean, some of the joy of WCW was watching them attempt to do NWO when they always did the N and the W too big, so the O ended up like having to be somewhere weird.
Like, it looked more like a dot than an O.
Like the one where we watched it, Piper, who was it? I can't remember who it was, like, it wasn't Piper, Piper got knocked out. It was like Bret or Jarrett, and they had to put the O in like Goldberg's thigh. But I do love the yellow X. It's kind of like a nice calling card of like, the Undisputed Era has gotten you, here's a yellow X.
Well, and it calls back to Tommaso Ciampa doing the yellow X on the table last week too, right?
Yeah, so it ties in. But of course, the 2-5-20 did not signal three rings of fire. It signaled the three rings of the Velveteen Dream's glasses. The Undisputed Era then turn around to see him on the top rope, posing. He jumps on top of them. It goes sort of hell for leather to try and beat them all up. He's fighting back. He's getting the best of them, and the Velveteen Dream kind of stands tall to end the show. Talk me through your thoughts as it happens, Sandra.
I'm just so happy to see him. I didn't know he came back. I did not see any spoilers before I watched the show. I'm really happy that I didn't see any spoilers before I watched the show, because I just kind of thought, okay, the show's going to go off the air with some brawling and they're beating each other up, and that's fine. And that's a fine end to the program. And then the Velveteen Dream music hit and I lost my shit. I was so happy. I've missed him so much. He's so good. It was very similar to Kane returning on Retro ITR this week again, right? Like, I'm making retro comparisons, but they felt kind of the same. They felt huge in magnitude. I mean, Velveteen Dream doesn't have a pallbearer, but still, he's back and he's fighting off the evil faction, right? This kind of stuff is great. I don't know, like, him just being himself and being awesome. I'm just so happy to see him. And now I'm kind of curious about his alliances, because he's never been one to have like tons of friends or anything like that. So it makes me wonder where Velveteen Dream is going. Is he going to have a place on TakeOver Portland? I would love for him to have a place on TakeOver Portland, because I want him to have a place everywhere and grace my television screen with his presence.
Do you know how many matches they have already on TakeOver Portland?
So many.
But it's six.
He's probably not going to have a match.
There's like six now, yeah. Can I tell you my dream return match?
What?
Velveteen Dream, Finn Balor.
Oh, that'd be so good.
That's the one. It's great for him to come back. And you know, it's funny. I also
Maybe WrestleMania week?
maybe
Wouldn't be the worst
take
idea.
over Tampa. Oh my God, the names. But no, I did. It's funny you picked up on the retro ITR thing because obviously we've been like bulk recording a bunch of retro ITR stuff. So we just watched the last two shows, and I got the same thing from it. I was like, and I think that's like when you watch this show, you're looking at people who are looking to, you know, when was a really popular period in wrestling? What were people things that people liked? So like the Broserweights bringing out the Dusty Classic thing in a golf cart is total Attitude Era type stuff that you would get, and it's how you make people feel more, you know, interesting or different, and then having Velveteen Dream do the big return at the end. Like, that's what we used to get. You used to get big returns, you used to get like different kind of angles, and I feel like in some ways I don't, for me anyway, and I know that for you it's probably different, but I don't know if I felt like NXT really hooked me for the first few months of the show. Like, I liked the shows, but I felt like it was just more NXT. But I feel like what they're doing now is they're doing NXT, but they're also kind of like putting it on drugs a little bit in a good way. And they're giving more, and they're doing more angle stuff, and they're doing more, you know, Charlotte coming over. They're having more interesting scenarios. They're having stuff that feels bigger. They're having big returns. So I think the last kind of month or so, NXT deserves a big bit of praise because I think they've done a really good job.
And I think they're trying to give people more character too, right? Like, I mean, we saw on
That's
the
my
show, you didn't
jam.
mention. Yeah, exactly. Like Shotzi Blackheart in a tank. Awesome. Love it. She has a tank and green hair. Like that's something that immediately you're like, I like this girl. She's cool. Even like Keith Lee has gotten just more Keith Lee about everything. Like when he comes out to talk to Dominik Dijakovic after Dominik Dijakovic beat Killian Dain on the show, and he's just like, all right, you, me, we're gonna do this in Portland. He says something. He's gonna do it for Coach Mayberry. Like one of his old coaches passed away this week, so I thought that was kind of a nice touch. Like he was kind of dedicating it to his coach and stuff like that. But Keith Lee just feels like a superstar, and you know who he is, and he's awesome, and we want to bask in his glory because he's awesome. And I feel like you're getting that more with people like Finn Balor. You know who he is. He's angry vet man who has come back and just decided to murder everyone with finger guns. And I like that about Finn Balor. I think that's great. Johnny Gargano is the heart of NXT. He's so good. And he wants to be the guy, even though he was only champion for a short time. He's the first Triple Crown champion in NXT. And he's the guy that everybody loves. I feel like I can name so many of the characters now and their motivations. And it doesn't just feel like good wrestling. And it doesn't just feel like a bunch of dudes and girls. It feels like a bunch of actual stars. And pretty much, I want to see everybody on the show, which is great.
I mean, I think what we're basically trying to say is a thumbs up show for us.
Strong thumbs up. Loved it.
Strong thumbs up. So let's talk about AEW. The ratings have actually come in. I should mention in case people haven't. I mean, you will by now because it's tomorrow. But that you're listening to this. But AEW got 928,000 viewers to NXT's 770,000 viewers. So kind of similar to usual.
Interesting with Charlotte coming to NXT and them hyping that.
Yeah, and it's not really made that much of a difference. I mean, NXT has got more viewers. I think last week their viewers were like seven. It was still 700 something, I'm sure, last week. I'm just going to try and find that now, actually. Last week, AEW got 712. So, like, an extra 60,000 viewers for Charlotte. And then
That's good.
AEW have increased by 100,000 viewers. So,
Both of them are up, which is good.
yeah, both are up, so more people watching than watched last week. So the AEW show was all about building to, well, building a lot of actually Dynamite shows as well as the Revolution pay-per-view on February the 29th. We kick off the show with Jon Moxley taking on Ortiz. It was Ortiz, wasn't it? And it's Santana next week. Yeah, Ortiz.
Yeah, it was Ortiz because the Santana got the eye thing afterwards.
Yes, so so we kick off with Moxley versus Ortiz, and we've got Jericho on commentary. Jericho on commentary is just an absolute blast. And the kind of big story coming out of it was not actually the match with Ortiz, like you say. It's the post-match thing where with the Ford GTA $750,000 keys, Jon Moxley decides to put Spike in Santana's eyes. Jericho's selling it on commentary like it's the most devastating thing ever. We've got Hager and Guevara just going crazy. And just big budget main event style wrestling done in a fun way.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun. I really liked Jon Moxley. There was a moment where Jon Moxley did some punches to Ortiz, and I had Dean Ambrose flashbacks, and I had to put that out of my head. But once we got past that and he became Jon Moxley again, it was all good. I really liked this. Ortiz, like, I really haven't seen much of LAX. I've only seen like a little bit of them before AEW just because I didn't really watch the shows that they were on. And I'd always heard that they were great, and you know, turns out they're really great. So it was interesting that they hyped this up as Ortiz's first singles match since 2016. So when Jon Moxley gets the win over him, it doesn't necessarily feel like, I mean, they had a great match anyway. It wouldn't feel like Ortiz jobbed out to Jon Moxley or anything, but it also makes sense, right? Like, Jon Moxley is a singles competitor. Ortiz is not a singles competitor. So he's a little out of his element here, even with, you know, any sort of like shenanigans and stuff. He's still out of his element. He doesn't have his tag team partner there to rely on. That's the style of wrestling he's used to wrestling. So it makes sense that Jon Moxley would beat him. And I mean, Jericho and Sammy Guevara on commentary were just delightful, like absolutely delightful. They actually add to the commentary instead of taking away from it, like so many wrestlers do. They managed to kind of put everything in the ring over, as well as being characters themselves on, you know, on commentary. Jericho obviously is very seasoned at this. Sammy Guevara isn't as seasoned, but like, I just find him to be a delight. I love Sammy Guevara. I think he's such a great part of the show. So yeah, really enjoyed this a lot. It was awesome. And then Jericho selling when it looks like Jon Moxley's gonna win and does get the pinfall on Ortiz, he's just like, no, what happened here? No, this was not the plan. This was not what was supposed to happen. And he sold it like the worst thing in the world had just happened to him. And I was glad. Like, that's awesome. And then, you know, Jon Moxley using the car keys to poke Santana in the eye afterwards was brilliant. It was great because
I do want to give
it's
big,
such a spit in the eye of Chris Jericho.
yeah, I do actually want to give props to later on in the show when we got the interview from Santana where he challenges the match for next week, and I thought he did a really good backstage promo. Like I was like,
Really good.
I'm the same as you. Like I was never really gonna watch Impact that much. I'd not seen a lot of LAX. I always heard they were really good, and like. You know, we talked. You mentioned it earlier when we were talking about NXT getting better. I'm a character guy. It's always going to be what gets me in wrestling. And Santana to me was coming across like a thug who is just ready to fuck up Jon Moxley for what he did to his partner. I love the whole eye for an eye thing. Like, it's just really good. So a really hot open to the show. My favorite line with Jericho and Sammy was when Jericho accused Sammy Guevara of like not paying attention to the match, and Sammy was like. Sorry, I've just got all these women looking at me, and he's like, "Oh yeah, they must be," and like
Yeah.
he's just like the idea that Sammy said this, and Jericho's like, "Oh yeah, that has to be what happened."
Well, wasn't he saying like, well, I mean, he's distracted looking at all these women, and Sammy's like, well, they're looking at me, of course.
And I also love at the beginning that like Jericho's coming over, and Jim Ross is like, "Here's the champ." He's like, he's not even trying to say the champion, just the champ.
No. Yeah, at one point, I think he did say Le Champion.
Le champion.
And like he's just like, I need to work on my French. Jericho also, can we just shout out to the little like bandana he's wearing around his neck that just says Le Champion?
Available on prowrestlingtees.com, Sandra.
Of course.
Of course. I
What
wasn't
a
gonna
prick.
I wasn't gonna bring up the SCU Best Friends match because we're short on time, but really I wanted to bring up, I mean, apart from Orange Cassidy's very funny spot of lying down with everybody. The post-match angle with the Dark Order came out. They basically beat up Orange Cassidy and he didn't want to join them, and then Christopher Daniels came out, and the idea here is that they backed off with the idea that he might be involved with them, and he was the Fallen Angel in the past. So my question I was going to ask to you was, would you want to see Christopher Daniels with the Dark Order? Would you want to see him be the leader? Would you rather he stay with SCU? Where would you sit on that whole debate?
On the Christopher Daniels thing, I don't know. Like, I'm intrigued by the sort of tension that they're building here with Christopher Daniels and the Dark Order, because I could see, like, he's not a tag team champion, right? Like, it's Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian who are the tag team champions. So Christopher Daniels is a little bit on the outs in SCU, not on the outs like they're fighting or anything, but he doesn't have anything to be doing in SCU. He is not the champion. They're not like doing the Freebird New Day rule, as far as I can tell. They haven't introduced that in AEW. So Christopher Daniels does seem to be a little bit the odd one out right now. And I think it's an interesting dynamic because he doesn't have a ton of wins. And now, well, I mean, obviously, like SCU aren't the tag champions anymore anyway. I just remembered because Kenny Omega and Adam Page are. But you know, he still seems to be a little bit like, I don't know, he seems like a prime candidate for the Dark Order to recruit. And I don't necessarily want to see him join the Dark Order. I don't want to see it. Like, if it happens, I will boo him because I don't want to see it. But I think it would make for a really interesting story if he did. I think them trying to recruit Orange Cassidy was just hilarious. Like, I think that was great. I think Orange Cassidy is just amazing. I love that they called out that Orange Cassidy is the number one merch seller, too, like above Chris Jericho. That shirt has just sold loads and loads and loads because Orange Cassidy is, he connects with people and he's dynamic and he is, I'm just so happy that he's working so well on the show.
They're using him very well.
They are. And the Christopher Daniels thing, like, I'm more, I don't have an expectation for where the story is going to go, but I am enjoying it. I think the Dark Order are great. Like, I love the Dark Order now. I really love them. The Dark Order commercial that we got later on in the show was maybe my favorite Dark Order ad yet. The prescription ad one.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if it plays as well in the UK, but like in the US, we have to watch so many prescription ads for like everything, right? And so it cracked me up when it was like, do you suffer from heartburn? And then the fine print said, none of the people in this ad have suffered from heartburn.
And the ads are great. The ads that they do are absolutely fantastic. And it's just going to be, I guess, getting that fine line of like people like you who are really into it and people like me who are like, I need to be slowly sort of like taken into it. And making sure that both of us are, like, in. But, I mean,
Well, other than the first segment that you hated and I liked, I think they've done a good job of striking that balance. Like, if you just...
Well, obviously, for me, the one exception would be the December
18th. The first segment aside.
No, the December 18th one. Where they
that's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, I thought you meant when they first came out, like, Double or Nothing. And had, like, just all the top...
No. I'm saying that, like, one that you hated. Like,
yeah.
Since then, I think it's gotten significantly better for both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, because they're playing it really well. And I think that the next step will probably be to get some... I mean, I think if Matt Hardy is the leader, I will just sort of be in. Like, he's the guy that I'm like... I would just go with it if he was in it. Anyway, so I will make quick mention.
He's definitely going somewhere, and he said on his Twitter the other day, it was like, in a couple of weeks, you will all be surprised or whatever. Like, he's not exactly hiding the fact that he's leaving.
What do you make of it? Obviously, Yuka Sakazaki did beat Britt Baker in relatively quick time, but Britt Baker used an attack with Lockjaw that is supposed to have sort of removed one of Sakazaki's teeth.
Well, because she put her on the rope. Her mouth on the rope and then kicked the rope and, you know, knocked out Yuka Sakazaki's teeth.
Do you like the idea of
this? And then put Lockjaw on, and then her hand was, like, so bloody that it was all slippery and stuff. It was kind of a good visual.
Do you like the idea of her, like, of the dentist kind of taking people's teeth? Is this, like, what Isaac Yankum should have been doing more?
Probably. I mean, I haven't really seen Isaac Yankum's career, so it's hard to compare. WWE hasn't put out that Best of Isaac Yankum collection for me on the network, but... Yeah, it's fine. It's fun enough. A lot of people seem more into Britt Baker as a heel than I am into Britt Baker as a heel, but I think given time, I will like it. I think she's doing the right things. I think she's finding her footing. I don't know. Like, she's trying. She's trying really hard, and I appreciate that. It's just not clicking with me as much as some other things, but I think this was a good step in the right direction. I love Yuka Sakazaki. Like, she's just adorable, and she's the magical girl, right? Like, she's awesome. And seeing Britt Baker be so dastardly to her here, I think was definitely a step up from her just making disparaging comments to announcers and stuff. Like, Britt Baker's a baddie, and I do want to see her get punched in the face at this point. So it's gotten a lot more effective for me, for sure.
We got the Big 8-Man tag with the Butcher and the Blade and the Lucha Brothers against the Elite. The great graphic this time was Hangman Page does not like this music for the Elite music. And... they had a really good match. I mean, I'm more into Paige than I am to the other three in the babyface team, wrestling style-wise. The Lucha Brothers are great. Butcher and Blade are decent. But obviously the big story here was that Hangman Page wouldn't tag in the Young Bucks, and that ultimately ended up contributing to their downfall. And in the end, Pentagon and Phoenix did the spike pile driver and got the pin on Hangman. Bucks are furious because they could have tagged in and got the win. I think the story element of this is working really well.
It's great. It's really great. Like, I mean, 8-man tags like this, again, like we were talking about with the main event of NXT, they are fine and they are good. But I think the added dissension between Adam Page and the Elite really adds to this for me. And it's crazy because even though Adam Page was kind of too up his own arse to work together with the Elite and he wouldn't accept a tag in, and he lost, like, that's something that I should be like, you idiot, right? Like, you are just contributing to the downfall of yourself and your crew. But for some reason, like, I like Adam Page so much that I kind of get it. Like, these people seem to kind of look down on him. They seem to kind of be like, you know, Adam, whatever. Like, he always kind of seems to be a little bit on the outside. And, like, Kenny Omega and the Bucks are, like, you know, they're EVPs and they're all in the club and they're all together and have their own thing. And Adam Page is like, dude, I want to do my own thing. And you keep dragging me back in. So I'm 100% on Adam Page's side here. I love Adam Page. I think he's great. Later on in that interview, when Kenny Omega is just like, you know, dude, what's your problem? He's like, well, I think I know what your problem is. And he, like, takes the glass of beer away from Adam Page so disparagingly. He wants to just have a beer. Let the man have a beer. And then Adam Page is just like, you know, you think it's just going to be a wistful stare into the distance where he's thinking about his potential alcoholism. And no, no, he just lifts up a pitcher and starts drinking from that. I love Adam Page. I think he's great.
Yeah, and I also like that they've kind of went and, you know, similarly when WWE turned Becky Lynch heel and they, like, just kind of realized that it was going to be a more babyface thing, like, clearly, even if they had a long-term idea here that it was going to be Kenny Omega and Hangman Page with Page as the heel, like, you can tell he's now not the heel. Like, he's not going to be the heel. Like, people no. love him. He's the beer. And I think there's almost something kind of, like, endearing about the idea that he's just a cowboy that drinks beer. Like, it's not complicated.
And what I like about it too is that it doesn't come across to me like he's just trying to be Steve Austin. Because I think a cowboy who drinks beer, you know, a redneck who drinks beer, it could easily be like, oh, you're just trying to be Steve Austin light. But that's not how it comes across at all. It feels like a completely different character, but just using some of the same elements, which is awesome. And I think Adam Page, like, when he first came in and he was going to be the number one contender for the championship, and he seemed to be like the guy that they were putting everything behind, and it just wasn't clicking with people. I think taking that step away and then building him as a character the way that they're doing now, now he's that guy, right? Like, now he's the guy that you're like, yeah, I want to see him in main events. Yeah, I want to see him do this kind of stuff. Maybe not like tomorrow, but in a few months, absolutely. Like, I want it to end up where Adam Page beats Chris Jericho for the championship. That's my dream.
There's lots of ways they can go with it, and I think that's the thing that makes it so good. Then on the show we had, sorry, lost my place. I don't know if it was here or later, but I loved the. I know we're saying we love everything, but the Darby Allin video package where he, like, sets on fire the Jericho and Sammy Guevara thing with a flamethrower, because he can't talk because his throat was damaged by the skateboard last week.
It's those little details that are excellent. Like, those details that they're doing are excellent. And there's been a lot of stuff like that, like the Dark Order ad with, like, just little details, like Adam Page's Chirons. These are the little details that are kind of put into, like, I mean, the Darby Allin throat thing is absolutely a detail in storyline, right? Same thing with, like, John Moxley using the car keys to stab out the eye of Santana. It's just like, him stabbing the eye and saying an eye for an eye would be great anyway, but the fact that he used those car keys and Chris Jericho's throwing a strop on commentary, like, that's my car, I need my car back. All of that stuff, like, the details matter. And when you get the details and storytelling right, it feels more robust and it feels more like you're rewarded for paying attention, which is great. I mean, Darby Allin is just incredible. He's so good. And he's another person that, like, I mean, he never wins. I still feel like he is prime candidate for the Dark Order to try to recruit him at some point, and that could be a brilliant story that they're not going with yet, but it's out there, and I wouldn't be mad about it.
I also loved the when Pac was on the big screen, he wanted the yes from Omega, so he was, like, using Rio as the prop, and then ended up, he was like, you know, I hope you don't think the, because he agrees to the match. And Pac says, you know, I may be a bastard, but I'm not a beast. I wouldn't attack Rio, but she is. And then out comes Nyla Rose. She powerbombs Rio onto the table and does this kind of, like, you know, chilling promo to the camera. They're going to face off for the title next week. So it was all kind of good stuff setting up future things.
And that's, again, that's world building, right? Because, I mean, would it make sense for Pac just to, like, go and get a formidable lady backstage to beat up Rio? Yeah. But the fact that he got the formidable lady that's also facing Rio for the championship next week. So Nyla Rose obviously has a problem with Rio because Nyla Rose wants to be champion and, like, totally should be champion. It's it's just works really well. It's great. Like, I really, really like this sort of world building stuff. And I think that AEW, it took them a while to find their footing, as it's going to with any company, but I really feel like they're starting to find their stride. And I'm only in the past couple weeks has it really gotten to the point where I'm like, ooh, yeah, like I'm into these AEW stories, because I think it just, it took me a few months to kind of get into their world and kind of figure things out. But I think they're on a roll. I really do.
So I have a quick question for you before we talk about the main event. They had the match with Joey Janela and Kip Sabian, and I was trying to figure out why the Joey Janela Kip Sabian feud. I mean, I loved the kiss last week, obviously, but like, it's not like, it doesn't feel like it's as hot as it should be. And I heard, I think it was Alvarez had said about it, that like, we've never seen Joey Janela and Penelope Ford as a couple, like on the AEW screen together.
Right.
So the idea that like, he's, you know, Kip Sabian's now with it, it's like, they are telling us what's happening, but I feel in some ways, you know, it's not the same thing, but work with me here. It's like, the reason that we were so happy that Kane got his hands on Tori was because we saw Tori fuck over Kane before she went with X-Pac. We've not seen Penelope Ford fuck over Joey Janela, really. We've just seen her sort of turn up with Kip Sabian and be told she used to be with Joey Janela. And I feel like it's almost like, I know what they're going for, and I think it's very, it takes a big person for Joey Janela to be able to do this angle. A lot of people would not do it. But it just feels like it's kind of not working as much. So I'm asking a load of questions here, but there's that. And the other thing I was going to ask you is, you've seen a lot of Joey Janela. Are we getting the full Joey Janela experience? Because I feel a little bit like I'm not hugely into him yet, but I wondered, am I not seeing all the stuff that, you know, I would see if I was going to see Spring Break and stuff? Like, is this the full Joey Janela experience?
I mean, it's hard to say, because I've seen Joey Janela matches, and I've seen, like, I went to Spring Break 2, but like, one of my least favorite matches on Spring Break 2 was the main event. So it's, and I think Joey Janela is very good in the ring. I think what a lot of people like about Joey Janela is kind of his quirkiness and just kind of him being an off the wall character. And that's, like, if you follow him on social media and if you follow, like, Spring Break booking, he's like, yeah, I booked this entire card, like, over Facebook Messenger when I was drunk or whatever. And, you know, he thought of Minoru Suzuki versus Orange Cassidy at, like, a bunch of White Claws in, and he was drunk, and, like, somehow he made it happen. Like, he got the idea for it and he made it materialize. Like, that's kind of, like, the spirit of Joey Janela, right? And I don't know how much of that can actually be captured on television. It's hard for me to answer, because I'm not as familiar with his career as a lot of other people. Like, I never really saw a bunch of his CZW stuff. I've seen, you know, I've seen Joey Janela and Penelope Ford be great together. I think, you know, like, we saw them at All In, and like, I've seen some of their stuff where they have been together, and Penelope Ford has gotten involved in his matches the way she's getting involved in Kip Sabian's matches now. They were always a great pair. Like, I still get the idea that they're still friends, which is why, you know, they can do this angle and stuff. But it's, I don't know, like, I really liked the Joey Janela Kip Sabian angle. But I can understand where it does feel, for a lot of AEW viewers, like you're coming in the middle of the story. Like, you didn't see the preamble, right? It's kind of like watching a sequel or joining a soap opera in progress, where you didn't see the dastardly betrayal and, you know, like, that all happened a year ago, and you can't go back and watch everything because there's just too much and it's episodic and it's ongoing. So it does kind of feel like joining a story in the middle. I don't know. Like, Joey Janela's, like, wrestling style and whatnot, I have trouble even putting my finger on it, because I'm just not that familiar with him as a wrestler. Like, I'm more familiar with him as a personality, and, like, I follow him on Twitter, and I think he's a delight.
Is it maybe that we're not getting to see a lot of the personality of him? You know,
I think that's probably it.
You know, some people work better when you get that. Yeah, I was just curious.
Because I think, like, the lead up to Joey Janela, John Moxley, where he was like cutting the promo in the coffin and doing a bunch of crazy stuff like that, I think that more like harnessed the spirit of Joey Janela for me than what they're doing with Joey Janela and Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford. And I think, you know, stuff like him popping up in the middle of Penelope Ford and Kip Sabian for the kiss and everything, that felt like, yeah, that's Joey Janela. Those are Joey Janela antics. They were a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, the story is working for me, because it still does feel a little odd to see Penelope Ford with Kip Sabian. And I know that they're, like, really together in real life and stuff, and that's great for them. But because Penelope Ford and Joey Janela were so synonymous for so long, it does kind of feel strange. And so I guess for me it works because I saw the two of them together before and now they're not. So I feel like I saw the beginning of the story or like parts of the beginning of the story, but I understand why it wouldn't work for people as well who don't really follow him.
So the main event segment on AEW was all set up to MJF getting to give Cody his 10 lashes. He comes out and chooses to do it on Cody's belt rather than his own because he doesn't want to dirty his own belt. They turn this into a big thing, and I was kind of curious because I didn't know whether you would really like it or really not like it. I know that sometimes things that go too long for you can be things that don't work. They really milked a lot of the stuff on it. Some people say it was really captivating. Some people are saying that, you know, when you think about the real life implications of Cody being one of the owners, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. I was wondering where you sat on it all.
I got kind of bored, honestly. Like, it went on for a really long time, and I understand what they're doing and I understand what they're trying. And I think that they did as well as they could. I think Cody's reactions to the lashes were good. Maybe it's harder for me because I see these wrestlers. Like, I don't have a problem with it as like Cody's the owner of the company and he could just book this. Like, I don't want this to turn into the Triple H show completely, right? Like, I don't want it to just be like, I'm going to change the matches and I'm going to make this happen. I like the fact that Cody is saying, no, I will play your game and I'll take these lashes and I'll have the match with Wardlow and I'll, you know, agree not to touch you and stuff. I think the moment where I think MJF does like a lash to him and then Cody turns around and gets in his face, but he doesn't touch him. And MJF is like, hit me, you know, because then it's all over. Then you lose. And Cody's just like, nope, I really want to get my hands on you. And I know I have to wait until Revolution. And they're building that tension, right? I think that kind of stuff is great. It's just 10 lashes doesn't seem like that much punishment to me. And I know that it hurts. I'm not saying that it doesn't hurt. It hurts. Obviously, look at Cody's back. He's in pain. But, like, I did just see a strap match with Daniel Bryan in The Fiend where Daniel Bryan's back looked pretty similar to Cody's. And I've seen hardcore matches that aren't even, like, crazy death matches or anything, but, like, kendo stick shots and stuff where dudes get hit across the back with a kendo stick 10 times, and that's just part of a match. So I think that was it for me, was, like, 10 lashes, you can take 10 lashes. You're Cody Rhodes. You've been through worse. I've seen you with your face full of blood, like, I think you're going to be okay. And I think that's what kind of didn't click for me. It wasn't any sort of like philosophical thing or whatever. I think, you know, his emotion, and he's just like, when he's lying on the ground, like he can't take any more pain from these belt hits. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I've seen you take worse.
I'd seen a lot of the, like, both sides talking about it before I watched the show, because I only watched the show like this afternoon. And for me, this ended up being like my favorite segment of both shows.
Okay.
But I think it's because I do enjoy, like, milking something a fair amount if it works for me. And, like, you're totally right. If you were to analyze it and go, you know, he has had more punishment, he can handle more punishment, you're totally right. That is true. I think it hooked me enough that all never entered my head, because I was really invested in it, and I was really invested in the way they did it. And I really liked the idea of, like, all these smarmy heels at the top of the ramp kind of watching it take place. I liked that it got worse as it went on. I liked that MJF was, like, trying to focus on the same area to get welts. Wardlow taking one. I liked everybody coming down. Like, even, like, when the Young Bucks came down and Matt Jackson, like, held close to Cody, you can imagine him just going, you just got to take four more and then you'll get this little cunt. Like, this is... And one of the bits that really worked for me, and maybe it's because we're watching Retro ITR and Stephanie and Triple H are everywhere, is that when Brandy came down, and bear in mind that we have, like, we've said on this podcast, and a lot of other people have said that Brandy's, like, one of the worst parts of the show on that Nightmare Collective thing. It was so bad. They've listened and they've ditched it. Awesome Kong apparently got laid out by the Nightmare Collective on Dark, and they've written her out of the show to go and film Glow, but, you know, they have. And
right.
So Brandy came out here as, like, the wife, and when she, like, put her hands on his hands and was like, I love you so much, you just need to take one more, I was like, I totally buy it. I buy that they are a married couple and she loves him and she's like, you just need to do one more. And I thought she sold that. I felt more genuineness from Brandy and Cody in that moment. And I don't have an upcoming show with Cody, so it's not me saying it because I'm his friend or something that people say. But, like, when they were, like, he was holding her hand or whatever, I was like, I've never in the 20 years I've watched WWE ever felt that level of sincerity between Triple H and Stephanie. And
right.
I felt like Brandy and Cody showed that to me here, and that showed me that there is something there with like Brandy being on the show and with what they're doing by the way they're telling the Cody story. So I don't disagree necessarily with anything that you've said, but for me, I think part of all the stuff, like especially the level of punishment, it just all left my head because I was into it. So it worked.
Well, and
for
I
me.
Like pieces like that. I like pieces like that because, and especially because we haven't seen Brandy and Cody together on the show in quite some time, right? Because it's been all like Nightmare Collective and yada 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 and stuff that we don't really like with Brandy. But like to see her come out and interact with Cody, and this was the time that like it was so important that she needed to hold his hand and like spur him on and like give him that strength. I thought that was beautiful. Like, I think that's a beautiful moment.
And
I
that's the Brandy we want.
That's the Brandy we want. That's the Brandy that works. So yeah, no, I mean, like, I like that part of it. I like the idea of MJF giving it to Wardlow so that, you know, the hit will be even harder because Wardlow's big and strong. Like, individual pieces of this I liked, and I think it was well orchestrated. It's just for me, it went on a long time. And like, you can say it actually, like, drawing it out the way they did made the lashes worse, because if you just take 10 in a row, then it's like, ow, that hurts a lot. But
ow that hurt,
and like it would be painful, but I think like the anticipation of the lash is probably worse. It's like Slapsgiving on How I Met Your Mother, right? Like, you'd rather just take 5 slaps instead of like waiting and constantly like just being like, am I gonna get slapped now. So it, I understand the drama of that. I was also just kind of like, it's a lash from a belt.
Yeah, no, and like I say, I totally get that. And I think it's just, I think a lot of stuff, we've seen this when we cover current stuff and retro stuff, is just like, if something works for you, it can completely sort of be hypocritical to what you would say to something else if those characters don't work for you. So yeah, I think it's totally fair. And I mean, AEW for me overall was a big thumbs up show, and I think that the Cody MJF stuff is really working for me. I can't wait for Cody to get his hands on MJF at Revolution. So was that a thumbs up show for you?
Yeah, it was a thumbs up. I really liked it. I thought it was great. Like I said, I'm getting properly more into AEW stories now, which is good because I'm invested. Like, I look forward to watching both shows on Wednesdays, which is great.
What are the plugs, Sondra, as we ride off into the sunset together?
Yes, you can follow me at SondraRW. You can follow Kenny at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where you get tons of bonus content from us. ITR Overrun, lots of stuff with Kenny and Finn. Can't speak. I'm very tired. But yeah, Power Slam Overrun and all sorts of other bonus content. Retro ITR, if you want to hear us talk about all this retro stuff we keep referencing, because 20 years ago seems like very similar things are happening this week. Retro ITR is also at patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes, where you can get video clips, interviews, clips from live events, all sorts of good content there. And go to insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets to get last minute tickets to see JR in London, Manchester, and Glasgow this weekend, starting tomorrow, I believe, or today. I don't know when this podcast is actually coming out.
Today
it's happening, and you can get tickets and go see him, and it would be great. And then also you can get tickets to see Kenny Omega in April.
Indeed. So thank you for listening, everybody. To play us out, we will play the music of
Velveteen Dream.
Velveteen Dream, because he returned in NXT. Here's Velveteen Dream. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Velveteen Dream.